Welcome to The Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Fourth Age. I, of course, am Andrew Gellos, and with me this episode is Virginia.
Hi, Andrew. It's great to be here, as always. And also with us, we have that coming along, Mark.
Hey, Virginia. Thank you. It's glad to be back. And with us, we have Spencer.
Hi, everyone. We have a great show tonight. We have several special guests with us tonight. Joining us tonight is the Amaryllis seat of Dragonmount, responsible for JordanCon and the Wheel of Time track at DragonCon, Jennifer Liang.
I'm actually a retired Amaryllis at Dragonmount. I don't do that anymore.
Oh.
But thank you.
And in addition to Jennifer being on the podcast, we are also very, very happy to have with us Team Jordan. First and foremost, Alan Romanchuk.
Hello, everyone, from sunny Charleston. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you here, Ellen. And also, we have with us Robert Jordan's right arm, and I don't know how you would say the maybe the Amaryllis seat of Team Jordan. I don't know. But anyway, Maria Simmons, we're so happy to have you here with us.
I am so happy to be here. And I think Harriet would have to be the Amaryllis seat of Team Jordan.
Yes,
well,
totally.
I should say that would make you the keeper.
Yes.
Yeah, Keeper of the Chronicles. There we go. See, I had it all wrong.
I can see Maria being a keeper.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it's really great to have you both here. Quickly, though, before we jump into our questions, we need to give our customary spoiler warning.
All right, this is Brandon Sanderson giving you a warning that this podcast includes spoilers. Spoiler alert, don't listen unless you've read all the books. Otherwise, we will hunt you down and beat you up.
Gotta love Brandon.
God, how funny that is.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. Honestly, I think we've set it up pretty well. We'll be discussing almost anything that we can possibly think of to ask. We're on a limited time basis, obviously, so without any further introduction, I think we'll just launch in and try to keep it simple and get as much as we possibly can, because I know I could probably fill up a couple hours by myself in just random questions as they come to my mind.
Absolutely.
Not hard.
One of the questions, and this is a really weird one, at least for me, I was wondering, and obviously we know that if it's pertaining too much to things that are going to be coming out in the books that haven't been released yet, we know that they can't be discussed, and that's, completely and totally understandable. But I was really wondering, I've recently started yet another reread of the series with my wife, and I got to thinking about the Horn of Valyr, and once again, I, sometimes flip back and forth between the way I originally heard it and the way that it probably should be pronounced. But how does the horn function? Is it actually an old Tarangriel, or is it completely unrelated to the One Power?
Okay. We don't really know. No one really knows. It's an ancient artifact, probably not a Tarangriel.
Excuse me, Maria, I have to interrupt for just a moment.
Okay.
I actually found some notes on this in the bottom of Jim's desk. I don't know if anyone's interested. But.
Oh, yes.
Just a little?
Please?
Well, you see, the Horn of Valyr was, as Maria said, it was created by mortals. We know that. Jim has said as much publicly, and the horn was created in the age before the Age of Legends, or at least one age before. We don't, it was not known how far back. But I've discovered that the horn actually was the original horn played by Dizzy Gillespie. It was manufactured by King. It was the Silver Flare model. And something happened after this age. There was so much bebop imbued in this instrument that it took on its own magical qualities. And it was, when it was found during the Age of Legends, the bent bell was refashioned into a curved curve, and they put in the old tongue inscription inside the bell.
Wow.
That is awesome.
I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, it's really obscure, but the power of bebop is unlimited, and it just transformed through the last couple of ages to get into Rand's world with its current. Now, originally, when he blew it, musicians would appear.
Ah.
Yeah, but
backup band.
But because of the needs of the time, you know, it suddenly became heroes would emerge when it was played. So that's all we can really say about it. Do you have anything else to add, Maria?
No.
No.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Fury Landers to get a hold of that.
Oh yeah. So now we know that the wheel even weaves inanimate objects into the pattern and makes use of them as it wish.
Now, that story I expect to see in the next Great White Book, version 2. Which brings me actually to... Well, that was one of the questions I was going to ask later on, but I thought I'd pick a different tangent rather than Tarangril and the Horn of... call it Valir, but...
Please correct our pronunciations, too, you guys, whenever you... run across it. That's one of the big things we want to try to pin down is how we should pronounce some of these things. So if you hear us say something and you don't think it's what RJ would have wanted, as we so familiarly refer to him, then please just break in and know.
Okay. Valir is the way he pronounced it.
Okay.
Yay, I got it right.
Yay. Who's keeping score?
Okay. Well, I'm almost never right, so it's good to be able to say I was right for once.
Well, I used to be wrong about a lot of pronunciations when I first started working for him, because that was about the time of Crown of Swords. And I would say something and say it wrong, and he would give me this look, like, what are you saying, and correct me. So I got most of them down over time.
I can see that look perfectly, because I actually have a very short video clip from one of the book signings where somebody tried to pronounce the Shaido. And, I mean, he just gave them the look and said, it's not Shaido, it's not Shadow, it's Shaido. And everybody kind of went, okay. He could quell an entire room with one look. It was amazing.
Jordan at a signing, the first thing he said to me was correcting my pronunciation of something. I was like, oh, I've ruined it. He'll never talk to me again now.
He wouldn't hold it against you. I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, clearly he didn't, because he did eventually come to DragonCon, so.
Okay. So I got a question that actually goes all the way back to the very beginning of the series.
Okay.
Will we ever find out whose voice it was at the end of The Eye of the World?
Rafo.
Yeah, that's a
wrap-up.
Score!
I figured, but I had to ask.
I wondered how long it would take.
Well, along those same lines... Oh, no, go ahead, Alan.
No, I was just going to say that Maria and I have spent some time trying to figure out different ways to say read and find out. So we're going to be trying out some of them today. We'll see how
it goes. Oh, this will be fun. Well, let me see if I can get you another trial run here. Asmodian?
Who's he?
Yeah. Who's that guy?
He's Toast. That's who he is.
No, Sam is Toast.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, I think he is too.
If anybody sees the back of my car, they will see that I killed Asmodian. All I'm going to say.
I thought it was Bella.
Mm. I do like the Bella killed him theory. That one is just insane enough to be true.
I like that Bella is the nay Iblis.
Yeah.
Terrible puns are always a good thing.
Yeah. I love it.
And the master of the terrible pun is on this call.
Oh.
In Jim's office.
Oh. Well, feel free.
I am.
Anyway.
I am.
Anyway. Well, okay, so we got two. You pronounce it Rafo, right? Not Rafo?
I say Rafo.
Okay.
I don't know that there's Rafo. A real pronunciation for that
she
one.
She says Rafo. I say Rafo.
Oh,
let's
no,
call the whole
musical.
Thing off.
Yeah. Well, we got two right off the bat. We got two right off the bat. I don't know what else we're going to
try.
Probably
pitch.
Everything. okay, my pet peeve is the famous library triangle that was uncovered in Ebodar. Why is it that, is all that non-fictional knowledge ever going to come into play? And my favorite rant, what's wrong with Elaine that she's not using it to find out some things they probably desperately need to know? I guess she's using it as a doorstop. I don't know.
Well, one, we haven't seen Elaine in the whole book. We don't really know what she's doing. And two, she has problems channeling because of this pregnancy deal. And three, everything's going to be in old tongue, and she's a little busy to sit down and translate documents.
That's true.
But you don't understand the significance of that Tarangriel. Jim foreshadowed the creation of the Kindle.
Oh, no.
He did. And actually, Elaine, right now as we speak, is in her bed reading fiction on that.
Oh,
I bet they're dirty romance novels.
Probably.
I was gonna pick her for an urban fantasy, you know,
yeah.
Fan. So.
No. She loves the Harlequin. Case closed.
Oh, the Harlequin. Yeah.
Hmm. Yes, totally.
Either her or Evienda, but one of those two are definitely into the Harlequin super romance.
I think
how could she get all excited about the cover art of Fabio when she's got Rand?
I'm sorry. Have you seen
the cover of
yeah.
Lord of Chaos?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You know, no comparison.
Yeah, that one was nicknamed at our house Passion of the Aes Sedai.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's, yeah. Well, and then there's the...
I actually had to take the dust jacket off of that one when I would take it to school when I was in high school because I was like, I do not want people to think I'm reading some kind of filthy romance novel in class.
Yeah, really. Well, I was thinking more of, what is it, Crown of Swords, you know, where he's got the... all he needs is some baby oil and a little less clothes, and he'd be, like, right up there with posing.
It's pumping Rand.
Yeah.
We love this pumping bodybuilding Rand.
Don't make me get out the water ball to squirt you, ladies. Jeez.
I have a cardboard cutout of fist pumping baby oil Rand in my garage right now. I use it as a standee at conventions.
Oh, cool.
It's very
yeah.
That.
Is that cool or is that so, creepy?
No, I think
it's
a little insane, I think.
He's not
so
quite
while
full
we're talking side. About. While we're talking about non-existent or gone people here, why don't I ask a question that's been irking me for about 5 or 6 books now. Where did Gidel Kane go?
Birgitta thinks he's been reborn into the world.
That's a nice
hey.
Little answer.
No kidding.
Birgitta
well,
thinks he's been reborn.
That's why she's mooning over all the ugly children, ugly boy children she can put her hands on. You know, oh, maybe this is him. You know.
But keep in mind, the only way she thinks that is because she hadn't seen him for a while in Teleron Riyadh before she was yanked out by Mogideon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we don't even know if that's true, do we?
That's true.
Yeah.
I just threw that out for what it's worth.
No, it's... But she did always say that he was usually born before her, and but we don't know how long in real-world time, so he could be more than a child, hopefully. Or he could still be lurking in Teleron Riyadh.
There's no way he could be more than a child. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, but hasn't, you know, the entirety of the books we have isn't more than a couple of years, is it?
Yeah, it's been about 24 months for the main characters, I think.
Yeah.
Alan would know for sure.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is true. Of course I know, but I can give you various possibilities. He could be born as a child right now. He could still be lurking in Teleron Riyadh. He could have been ripped out the same way Brigida had been, in which case he would be an adult, right?
Unless he was dead, because wouldn't it require someone to bond him after he gets ripped out? Wasn't that kind of the deal with Brigida?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe he's stronger than she was. Maybe he's stronger.
There are a lot of possibilities.
Maybe somebody has a really ugly warder they're not talking about.
Right. Warders are beautiful. I mean...
Yeah, go check Morella's quarters. I think Morella's got a real penchant for hiding extra warders around.
Yeah.
But she likes hers pretty.
Well,
yeah, she
goes
for
pretty.
But she had Lon.
Well, Lon,
a
I wouldn't
pretty
have
man.
Pretty, but...
Lon's impressive, but I don't know if anybody would call him pretty anymore.
Speaking of which, what is the latest update on Lon, and are we going to hear anything in this book?
Peruse and find out.
If you look on the forums at Dragonmount, you can find a thread about the reading that Brandon did at DragonCon a couple weeks ago, and Brandon read us a portion of the prologue that was a Lon point of view.
Ooh, I missed that. I don't know how I missed that.
Because
there's
you weren't at DragonCon.
There's a real possibility he has saddle sores about now.
Probably.
I would think so. I mean, he's been riding since World's End at Saldea, so.
Yep.
I hope
he's gotten
right
as far
too.
as Kandor in the passage that Brandon read us.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty good distance.
And actually kind of a circular tie-in with Lon having gone to Kandor in New Spring. I have a kind of a question which so much doesn't connect directly to the Wheel of Time world, except that it also connects Wheel of Time to the broader scope of our world, and I've just been itching to ask this. I've recently been in a course in restoration literature, and in the historical studies there, I noted that there seem to be connections between Kyrian and London at around the time of the mid into early 1600s. The fact that cities built against a river, the city burns when the Aiel attack. And there are various cultural features that seem to reflect London around that time period. I was wondering, am I just completely imagining this? I know occasionally Mr. Jordan would take things from various different places and kind of merge them together to create a unique individual space. And I was just sort of, just wondering, is there any actually of historical London in Kyrian, and if there is there any more anywhere else in the major cities?
Yes. One thing you have to remember about Jim is he never did a single reference in any of his descriptions, whether it's a military uniform, a city, a character. Everything seemed to draw from multiple sources. So, yes, Kyrian was most likely in part based on London. But, you look at the map of it and you can see it's very different as well. It's laid out in a very rigid grid fashion.
Yes.
You could say in that case, well, maybe it's based on New York City in part as well. It has a palace up on the highest hill within the bounds of the city. That's not true of London, but it's true of other places. And London wasn't the only city burned by attack. There were many others. But yeah, I mean, Jim had a huge number of books in his reference library, and he traveled a lot as well. So he saw many of these places. And in typical Jim fashion, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he had 8 or 10 or 12 influences in the creation of Kirian.
That's great, because yeah, what actually caught my notice, because even the Great Fire of 1666 probably would have passed me by in connection to the Wheel of Time world, except for the fact that then I looked at the semi-puritanical dress that the nobles, people in the city were taken to wearing, and then on the day I thought of this question, was sitting there looking at a screen with a picture of Oliver Cromwell, the Lord Protector, and I was just like, you know, that's almost what I kind of envision the Kyrian and nobility to kind of look like. It's like,
One thing we've never seen in any of the Wheel of Time history that I can recall, and London, historical London brought it to mind, is we've never seen a large-scale plague in history. You know, like the Great Plague of the year, I've forgotten now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, of course, so many of the rats have been eliminated, haven't they? But they're back now.
They're back. Maybe the plague is coming, but they need more trouble.
It's funny that you brought up London as an influence, because most people, when they're talking about influences on Kirian, they really pick up on the court of the Sun King and Marie Antoinette, because the style of dress is very, you know, 1700s France, late 1700s, and Marie Antoinette. And there's also a lot of Japanese influence, and that tends to be what people pick up on. So this is the first time I've had somebody say, you know, I really think there's a London influence. So that's kind of interesting.
I guess everybody brings something different to the books and interprets them in their own way, you know.
Yeah, another interesting point. Anyone remember what the name Kirian means in Old Tongue?
Hill of the Golden Dawn.
Hill of the Golden Dawn. The Order of the Golden Dawn was an occult society in London back before the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah, that's right. Forgotten that.
Which I just bring out as you know, yet another thing that Jim latched onto and threw into the mix.
Most people look at the Hill of the Golden Dawn, they think, oh, like the land of the rising sun, which would be Japan, because there's a heavy Japanese influence in just the way, the style of the buildings and things like that seems very Japanese.
Sure, and the Sun King of France.
Yeah.
The King of France.
So it's kind of like he just pulled everything that was related to the sun and kind of melded it together to make Kirian.
Yeah.
He liked mixing things up.
Yeah.
And it works really well. That's the surprising thing to me, is that he, you know, he was able to pull from so many different sources and make things that seemed very coherent and logical for the cultures.
Yeah, I like the fact that everything that you read as you're going along, all these things sort of tug at the back of your mind, and you're thinking, oh, that's why that reminds me of this and that reminds me of that. And it makes you really think, and it adds a depth to the thing that you come back to later and sort of explore again.
Okay, I've got a game for you. Go to Wikipedia, put in something like Golden Dawn, let's say, or just anything. Pull anything from the Wheel of Time books that's distinctive. Put it into Wikipedia until you find a hit. I almost guarantee within that article you're going to find yet another reference from the Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
Track that. See how many hits you can go before you run out.
Oh, I'll have to try that.
I did that the other day, and I wound up spending an hour and a half just going from one thing to another. It was really amazing.
I can see myself losing an afternoon doing that.
Easily.
Very easily.
I've lost too many hours to wiki walking already.
I know.
It's not hard at all to do.
I guess that's why it bothers me so much about that Library Triangle. If I had that, I would never be able to put it down. And I guess I just understand how somebody could not, if they can't deal with it, delegate. But then again, it's just neat, because that's the equivalent of having a computer hooked up to the internet in front of you. I could not walk away from it. it would be a mind trap for me. So I guess another question that I've always wondered about, for a very long time anyway, is the idea of a channeler being able to be turned to the Dark One by the combination of 13 Dreadlords, or presumably Black Aja channeling through 13 Murdral. And I've speculated, like everybody has, who it might be, but can you tell us, without a repo, have we yet met someone who has been turned against their will? And is there a way to detect it, if there is?
Not that we know of.
We don't know that we've met anyone yet?
Right.
Okay. You think they'll discover a way to be able to detect someone who has been turned?
Anything is possible.
More Aes Sedai answers, but I guess I expected that.
Well, what do you expect? You are of the brown Aja there, Virginia. So.
Yeah. Green. No, I'm green. Get out of here. If I were Aes Sedai, I'd be green.
I guess part of the thing that is interesting to me, once again, being a student of literature, I am horribly fascinated with fictional languages. How extensive is the vocabulary of the Old Tongue as it exists right now? I mean, I'm assuming that there is more of it than we have seen in the novels. And do you know if there were rules set down to explain the creation of the vocabulary? And kind of alongside that, I kind of take the answer about London to be a similar question or similar answer towards whether or not there's an actual philological basis for the Old Tongue. Part of what I'm wondering is I've been using the Shinaran phrase "Suravian Ninto Manshima Taishite" as sort of our closing for the podcast. I'm tentatively wondering how badly I'm butchering that.
Oh, you're spot on. Spot on.
Hey, Andrew.
Sweet.
Yeah. Jim actually spoke pretty extensively in public about the Old Tongue, and I even pulled up a letter that he had written about it, in which he says the Old Tongue is based on, for example, the languages Gaelic, Russian, Spanish, Chinese, Japanese, Arabic, and some editions of my own, bridging material, if you will. Grammar and syntax are a blending of English, German, and Chinese, with some influence from a set of African languages, read about long ago and all but the oddities of structure long since forgotten. He has inverted constructions. I mean, the thing about Old Tongue, the way it's constructed, it is a very loose language, like Latin, I guess. It can be presented in almost any order and be intelligible to someone who knows it. And there are several conventions involved in it, which could be explained for a longer podcast. But, those are the basics. He really did pull them from a lot of different areas. And he started by constructing the language, as I recall, there's a list of 850 or 880 common words that you need to know to be able to speak in English. And I don't know who created these, but he had that. We have the file. And he modified that, kicking out some words like electricity and so forth that wouldn't be useful in this, and adding some others, and putting definitions to them in Old Tongue. So he says, I never added it up, but he said we have a file of about 1,000 words. And this dictionary will be published at a later time.
Great.
Oh, that is awesome.
And that will be part of the encyclopedia, actually.
I can't wait.
That'll be great.
So this sort of leads me into my next question, which is something that 2 years ago when Brandon was out on the Mistborn tour, the last Mistborn book tour, during our interview, I asked him if they could please come up with some way for to say phrases having to do with the light, such as walk in the light or may the light illumine you, and in the old tongue. And he said he would do his best, and I think he just forgot. But we do have the audio. He kind of sort of promised. So we're sort of hoping that that maybe you can sort of bail him out on this one.
Well, I think all will be revealed in the encyclopedia.
Oh, I can't wait that long.
Except what
how is progress on the encyclopedia coming?
How is it coming?
Yeah, because I people ask me about it occasionally. I'm like, I don't know. They're working on it.
Well, it's been backburnered recently because we, you know, we're doing Towers of Midnight.
Right.
But that's my next project to get back into, doing basically the skeleton for it. And
cool.
And after A Memory of Light, we will go full bore on it.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, because I remember Harriet saying that it was due 1 year after the final book, whenever the final book is out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're working on it in between when we get time, when we're not doing podcasts and so forth.
Oh, now you're making us feel guilty. But not very.
One of the earliest questions I think I actually came up with for this interview, just, you know, idle curiosity, what are some of the most commonly mispronounced words and names from the series other than Lon, Aiel, Shanshan, and Shaido?
Egwene, Taim, Fael, Agianen, Finial. That's all I can think of off the top of my head. Well, Nynaeve seems to be mispronounced a lot, too.
Oh, you mean Nineveh?
I had all those right.
I read her name when I first saw it. I was like, I'm just going to skip her. She seems like a minor character. And then I was like, oh, crap. She's actually in this story. I'm going to have to figure out how to read her name.
I can't believe it. I've pretty much been saying them all pretty well. Oh, good.
Yeah.
It's always a worry, especially when you're doing a podcast. You know, when people are going to be listening, you don't want to start a trend if it's not going to be the right thing.
Or where we get the feedback that you're not saying that right. Please get your pronunciations correct. You're supposed to be experts. And I'm like, no, we're not. We actually say a lot that we're nowhere near experts in the series.
We're just fans like the rest of you guys.
Just making up answers. Leave us alone.
Yeah.
I still say some things wrong, but I've been saying them that way for a long time. So, and
yeah. Well,
people
can
get over it.
At the reading that we did at Dragon Con, Brandon had to read the word Eyes Dishar for the first time out loud, and he had to stop and be like, I've never said this word before. Make sure I get it right.
That is a good one.
That was funny.
Oh, and Elaine's brothers, there's Galad and Gawain.
Okay. Yes, we've been getting those right, too.
Those are awesome.
And see, I usually say Galad. I know it's wrong, but that's what comes out of my mouth, but I have on my little piece of paper here, it's Galad.
We'll just strike it up to you being Southern. Galad is a Southern way of saying it.
Well, because it is obviously expected, as we are doing an interview with a member of Team Jordan, who was the last person to see Asmodean alive?
It's murderer.
How did I know that one coming?
And who did you say that was?
Who indeed?
Okay. Well, we knew that wasn't going to be answered. So.
Yeah.
It was a good one, though. Good try.
Well, thanks. probably not as good as some of the Theorylanders would come up with, but I'm not at that level yet.
Theorylanders are scary good at coming up with tricky questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much.
Anytime
so, yes.
I think I know a lot about what's going on in this series, I go read their boards. I'm like, never mind. There's no way I know all this stuff.
Yeah. I know.
Where are they getting some of this from?
Kind of humbling.
Yeah.
Is he even reading the same books I am?
Yeah.
So, I actually have a question that leads more on to the line of channeling and weaves. And I think this might have been yours, Virginia, but it's also been tickling the back of my mind for a while. Why is it that no other channelers have rediscovered any lost weaves like they did with traveling, skimming, Quendiar, real healing,
and all that fun stuff before the Wonder Girls?
Well, one, we don't really know. No one did. They did. They didn't share it, sure. But, you know, not all channels are Aes Sedai, and even Aes Sedai don't always share things.
Yeah, they keep a lot back.
The Blue Aja, you know, has all its little secret weaves, and I'm sure all the other Ajas do as well. And two, I mean, there's the whole thing that Wheel Weaves is the Wheel Wills. Boy, I can't even say it. And sometimes the wheel weaves out what it needs. And with the last battle coming, it needs all the help it can get. So the really talented people, the really Taveran people, they come out again. That's for most of them. For healing, I mean, there's a different answer. Aes Sedai, they know how to heal people. And that's the way they do it. And they don't need to know anything better. And, I mean, it's just Aes Sedai being Aes Sedai. They think they know what they're doing, so they don't look for a better way to do it.
Okay,
and if they have discovered a better way to do it, they're probably not sharing it with other people because every Aes Sedai is looking for an advantage over the others.
Right.
Okay. So then that sort of partially answers the next half of my question is, how did some of these weaves get lost in the first place?
Oh, my favorite rant. All the Aes Sedai woke up one morning with amnesia. How did I travel? I can't remember.
Well, part of it, I mean, I was reading, of all things, the Big White Book. And, you know, the breaking lasted a really long time. And things were really breaking. I mean, you might know how to travel, but you didn't know if where you were trying to go was still there. You know, it might be in the middle of the ocean now or on top of a mountain. So people probably weren't traveling as much. And Aes Sedai were being killed right and left. There were a lot of these crazy men channelers wiping out entire cities, and the Aes Sedai women were trying to stop them, and sometimes they succeeded and sometimes not. So things really went to hell in a handbasket fast. And, you know, if a woman knew how to channel and she couldn't find anybody else who had the strength to channel, she couldn't really teach anybody to channel.
That's true.
To travel. What I meant to say.
Yeah, there was a time, of course, when the White Tower wasn't there. This, you know, White Tower is a recent innovation in the grand mm-hmm. scheme of things, and so the Aes Sedai after the breaking were everywhere. So there wasn't that institutional memory in all things at that point, and things
so
were lost.
The Hall of the Servants then basically was a much looser organization than the somewhat mm-hmm. hierarchical White Tower that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't really have a central storing place for knowledge or anything like that, is it?
Right.
And
yeah, I mean, think of what happened to us if there was a horrible disaster that wiped out the Internet. We would lose all of our knowledge, except for, you know, the stuff that we sell on books. But, it you know, that a good portion of our knowledge and communication is electronic now would just, you know, be gone.
But this podcast, this podcast would remain in people's hearts.
Well, you got me on that one, Maria, because if my computer was suddenly taken away and there were no others to replace it, I think I would probably have the equivalent of amnesia. It's my plastic brain, and I really need it.
I've always thought that the lost talents are also related to strength, because the modern Aes Sedai are weaker than the Age of Legends Aes Sedai, and a lot of these rediscovered weaves require a certain level of strength that just doesn't exist in most Aes Sedai.
Oh, right, and also talent, because to do the mm-hmm. healing, you have to have a certain talent for healing to make
right.
DR. Janya couldn't do Quen DR worth a darn,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't have that talent. So if somebody knew it, but there was nobody who could they could teach it to, it's gone.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the thing is, though, leading up to that comment, remember in, I believe it was Crossroads, but it might have been Knife of Dreams, when Sorilea, I have no idea if that's how her name is pronounced.
Sorilea.
She taught Cad Swain how to travel, even though she couldn't make the weave work herself. So just because you don't have the strength to make the weave finish doesn't mean you can't form the weave anyway.
That's true. But, okay, we've got our nameless Aes Sedai after the breaking, and she's found a little crew of people, and none of them are strong enough to travel. Well, she's going to show them how to do it anyway, and hopefully one day they'll find somebody strong enough. But, you know, they never do. So we've got the same thing. And, you know, it's sooner or later it's going to get, if you can't actually use it for anything, you're going to put it aside and not pay attention to it, and it will get lost.
Or by the time that bunch of people find someone who is, or might have gone through several iterations, and they might have the weave just a little bit wrong so that it doesn't work even.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, but is it, I don't think it's possible to write down how to do a weave. I think it's something that you have to learn through demonstration. You can't just write it down and be like, well, I'll put this on the shelf, and someday, 100 years from now, someone will come along and pick it up and figure out how to weave whatever from this. I feel like you have to be shown how to do a weave.
That is, I mean, that's how they do it. You know, the novices don't run around with heavy books. They run around being taught by actual people. It's my belief that, you know, writing might could give clues or something, but you have to be able to show it or work it out on your own.
Of course, I was going to say they could just check on YouTube and find out how, but then would the One Power Weaves even show up on video if they even had that?
Oh, that's a good question.
That is, I actually was wondering about that. I wonder if any of these things, I'm sure, obviously the effects would, but would, I presume that if most non-channelers can't see weaves, that it probably is nothing there for a video to pick up either. But it's an interesting question.
That is.
How to detect channeling without your camcorder.
With more channeling.
That's a Wi-Fi finder.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna be good now. Oh, that would be too funny. Well, that's going to bring in... it's a shame Jessie couldn't be with us. She really wanted to be, but she had to work and couldn't get off. One of her favorite premises is, you know, how drastically the Wheel of Time story would all be changed if they had access to cell phones and texting and the internet and everything.
There would be no story.
They do, though.
It would have been over.
Elaine has the communication to her own grill. They have cell phones-ish. They just don't use them.
Give them time.
I sort of dropped a couple of the guys to the floor one time when we were podcasting. I had to get up in the office I was working, and I had to turn a phone off, and I came back, and I said, I just had to disable that call box to Anguille. And they said, I'm like, oh, you're such a geek.
It's true, though.
A dork, I think, is what I actually was saying. Yeah, it's true.
No, you are a geek. Because dorks have no social status, whereas geeks are more knowledgeable in one or two given fields. And since we are all major Watt nerds, we qualify as nerds.
So I guess we got cred. Yeah, we got some cred there anyway. So I guess the next question I want to ask is, okay, how about those quadruplets?
How about those Yankees?
All right. I believe there are four. Is that right, Maria?
Yeah, four.
Uh-huh. Four. All right, so what else do you want to know?
Well, when are we going to find out about the quadruplets? I mean, we presume that they're working on the generation of them at some point here, but they're running out of time before the last battle. I mean, are these going to be born post-Tarmogoyen or pre-Tarmogoyen, or are we just going to have to read and find out?
Interesting question.
They are running out of time.
And Avienda's somewhere in the waste. Or on her way to the waste.
Well, now she is, but she was with Rand for quite a while, so.
Yeah, but she didn't have her honor, remember?
I know, but that doesn't mean that she couldn't have slipped up. You know, I don't know.
No,
that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering. Are they even started yet? If they're not started yet, I don't see how they could be born before Tarmogoyen, unless that's the odd thing, is she does a Star Trek sort of plot and has, you know, fully grown, you know, infants.
I'm just
going to
say, read and find out.
Well, you know we will.
Well, then.
Everybody, when you tell somebody that, does anybody ever just go, well, that's it, I'm done. I'm never reading the Wheel of Time again. No, they all come back and read.
Yeah.
I tried that once. I put the book down for a sum total of about 2 days, and I'm like, hell with it, I gotta keep going.
It is a very oddly addicting series.
Yeah. So here's one that I think this might actually have been yours, Spencer, because it sounds like almost your mental acumen that would have asked this one. With the exception of Rand, who is loose there in Telamon Reborn, are there any of the other characters that are reincarnations of prominent historical figures?
There's like Brigitte. Lots of Brigitte. Yeah, apart from Brigitte, yeah. I've always had this sort of fantasy in my mind that Nynaeve might be the reincarnation of Eldraine, or the last queen of Minethrim, or something like that. And Matt, you know, gosh, he seems like, before he even left the Two Rivers, the old blood was coming out really strongly in him. It makes me wonder if he's not the actual rebirth of some extraordinary battle hero from Minethrim.
Interesting speculation.
Which is going to go nowhere.
I can tell. Answers into their mouths. We're supposed to be getting answers from not giving them answers to give back to us.
Oh, was that a question?
Well, sort of.
No, you're doing well. Keep going.
He's going to do what he always does. He's going to sit back and listen to all the answers until he finds one that he likes, and he says, you know what? That was it.
Well, this is just something that we're going to have to hopefully read and find out, or I hope some of these questions are not going to be ones that Brandon has said that Robert Jordan just said this does not get resolved. You know,
that would
I'm
be
not
a shame.
Sure. I'm not sure where that will leave us. Endlessly speculating till the wheel stops turning.
There's no beginning or ending to the wheel of time.
Yeah.
Virginia will be reborn again once she passes, and she will still be even more into Watt than she was now. I can
impossible.
See it. I can see it.
Yeah.
Physically impossible.
You'll learn your letters so you can read Robert Jordan in the cradle.
And
well,
you'll have a huge advantage because all the books will be out by then and you'll just be able to read them one after the other.
That's right.
Yeah.
Although I was going to say, I think I have the advantage. I was probably reading Robert Jordan when a couple of you guys were in the cradle.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. Well, not in the cradle, but I was itty-bitty when the first book came out.
I think I was still in the cradle.
Wow. I feel
old.
Well, I'm 20. I'm not even 20 yet, so.
Oh, my gosh.
You weren't even born when the first book came out, buddy.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
It's like, but they still put up with me, and I think I'm older than Cad Swain. Or is that right? Cad Swain? Cad Swain?
Cad Swain.
Oh, yay. Whew. So far, I'm
except that we know that Cat Swain is a couple hundred years old, which, you know, is older than the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not quite older than Cat Swain.
You come close.
Yeah, I feel like it. Anyway, enough of that.
You're right, older than Rihanna. Or is it Rihanna?
Rihanna.
Rihanna.
Rihanna, okay.
Ah. Ooh.
That's
well,
on
maybe
our list.
General,
I say that one wrong the whole time.
In general, are ending E's pronounced in the Wheel of Time names?
He wasn't really, I mean, sometimes yes and sometimes, I mean, I was thinking about this, because if Cad Swain's final E was pronounced, she would be Cad Swaina, like Serena, and you could do a whole dance. But
Cad
there doesn't really seem to be a rule. It's just how he felt that day, I think, or how it sounded to him. Because
some are and some aren't, you know. It is kind of confusing, at least, but we don't know for sure if we're even right when we guess that, so you'd be the arbiter on this one. Unless, as Brandon said in our interview to him, and unless Robert Jordan comes down to us in a beam of white light and sets us straight, some of these things may not ever be known for sure. So.
Yeah.
You'll get to know. You have to tell us as best you can. But speaking of names that end in E, two that always kind of strike me are
I started out saying Morell, and then I kind of went to Morella because of the presumption that the final E's were pronounced. So I don't know for sure which one is right on that. I go back and forth between that.
That's interesting. I say Morell, but I'm not absolutely sure that's the way Jim said it.
And what about Leon?
I've always thought it was
Liana is correct. That one is
Leon.
Liana.
Okay, then Liana. Okay.
And Brianna.
No, I believe it. Morell. It's Morell.
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 You pronounce the Y more strongly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like a my.
Okay. Okay. Good.
Morell.
How close was Varen's approximation on the accuracy? On her accuracy in detecting the members of the Black that she had written in the amazing book that she gave to Egwene?
It was pretty close. She did a good job.
That's interesting because I'm still speculating that there may be other Black Aja lurking around that haven't been undiscovered. And actually, I have a whole load of questions I'd love to ask, but I just know they're all going to be, you know, read and find out answers. It always amazes me that Egwene spent so much time under Halima's, basically, thumb, in a way, that I can't believe that the only weaves that she laid on her were producing migraines. It makes me wonder if there isn't some hidden compulsion weave going on there that we'll find out later that maybe some of the Black Aja in the White Tower could take advantage of. You know, there are just so many things like that, but I just know you don't have the answer.
I don't want to go there.
Well, I don't think that there's any Black Aja left in the White Tower currently.
I wouldn't want to bet my life on that. I don't think there are
other
many.
Other than Mistana, who's hiding somewhere because she can defeat the Ozhrad, or so thinks Egwene herself in the end of Gathering
mm-hmm.
Storm.
Well, and you still have the Black Aja that escaped, too.
Mm-hmm.
There were
a lot of those that got out.
And we have Maria and Alan just sitting there going, yep, yep, you do.
Bickering behind their hands, you know.
No, I was just thinking she was minimizing headaches. It's what a horrible thing for migraine sufferers.
Listen, I get migraines. I have complete and total sympathy for anybody that gets migraines, but it seems to me like that probably wasn't the most... probably wasn't the only thing that she was doing to poor Egwene.
Well, the consensus that was in the Wattpad when I was editing that article this summer was that Halima was doing something to suppress Egwene's dreaming talent so that she was not getting messages about the future anymore from whatever causes this to happen. And so the headaches is just a side effect of that. I don't know if this is true or not. This is just the fan speculation from the Wattpad. But it is very telling that as soon as she gets away from Halima and is in the White Tower, her dreaming ability comes back because she had been having nightmares that she couldn't remember before about being chased by something or something like that. And then when she gets into the White Tower, she stops having those nightmares and she starts having the prophetic dreams again.
And she stops having headaches as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the headaches go away. And she does not make the connection in Knife of Dreams when she first sees this happen. I don't remember if she makes the connection in the Gathering Storm when she finds out about Halima's infiltration of the Solidar Aes Sedai. I have to go back and reread the Gathering Storm in the next couple weeks because I'm a little fuzzy on details there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly seems plausible.
I'm not surprised, but you guys have got this down to an art.
You guys give
I love it when I ask Marie and Alan things that relate to the fact, and they'll just kind of smile and nod at me and go, that's a good guess. Keep going.
I was going to say another Aes Sedai answer, but then, you know... That's true, too. I wonder if we're going to get the Ashima known for, you know, convoluted answers, but then they don't have the Ozhrad to get around. They can say whatever they want to at all times.
They'll just blow you up and have done with it.
Yeah.
They are refreshingly direct about their methods.
Well, we have about 20-some minutes left to go. I think before we get into our list of pronunciations even deeper, are there any things that you, Maria and Alan, would like to tell us or things that you think we might have overlooked in the conversation? I mean, what could you let us know that isn't going to be a point?
anything.
There's a book coming out on November 2nd. 12 Towers of Midnight, right?
We're surprised you haven't asked about that, and we were fully prepared to, but I'm sorry we've run out of time.
No, that's a payment. Okay. Well, I guess we'll just go on to the pronunciation.
Well,
okay,
our next little bit needs a little bit of a lead-in for our listeners who don't have access to our huge list of questions like we do. As part of our interview questions, we have a list of words, and we asked, how do you pronounce this? Each of these words? And there's about 43 of them. There are probably some on here that don't need to be on here, and I know that there are some that there aren't some on here that should be, but these are the 43 that were that we came up with.
Yeah, Spencer got mad at me because I went and annotated the list. Like, I couldn't even that. Take that off. I'm like, no.
I didn't get mad at you. I just took them off. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Take that one off. Anyway, and so, Maria, Alan, would you please go through the list and tell us how to pronounce these names and places?
Okay, here we go. And I may, you know, be wrong on some, but others
well,
aren't really sure.
And feel free to add some in.
Okay.
You know, feel free to add some in if something occurs to you as you're going. You know.
Okay. We have Adelaus, Elfin, Istishar, Medicia, Aradaman, Arafel, Birgitta, Bryn, Tyrion, Traphael, Ragkar, Elfin, Galad, Gawain, Gildan. I'm not sure if it's Harin or Harina. Dean Togara, two wins. Ilian, Iliana, Kandor, Liana, Malkir, Maine, Mirandi, Mirdral, Nablus, Neth, Neom Passes, Nynaeve, Plains of Merido, Rihanna, Sidar, Sidine, Saldea, Siane, Alan,
Shinar,
Swan, Soralia, Taraban, Tarwin's Gap, Teleron Riad, Tower of Gingai, Tremalking, Tuatha'an.
Do you want to go over the Sidar Sidine thing we talked about?
In the glossaries of the books, Jim has it Sidine and Sidar. I swear, I don't think he pronounced it that way. I mean, you kind of give a little hint of the I, but not much. Sidine, Sidar.
Yeah, he always seemed to be saying Sidine and Sidar. Right.
I'm surprised at how many of those I thought I knew that I didn't.
Yeah, that's, I'm like, wait a second, that's not how... Oh, I guess it is.
How did you get the traveling people again?
Pardon me?
Traveling people again that...
Tuatha'an.
There's something else. Oh, there's something else with the double A there.
Tuatha'an
Mi'er. Say it again.
Tuatha'an Mi'er.
Okay. Great. Any others you can think of that are commonly mangled that would have driven Jim crazy?
I think I've mentioned Taim before. And Egyanen.
Demandred?
Demandred.
Demandred?
Demandred, I think. But I wouldn't swear Demandred.
Pretty straightforward.
Gosh, I'm trying to think.
How about all of the Forsaken? A lot of them kind of get mangled, actually, or a few. Grendel?
Grendel.
Correct? Yeah, Grendel.
Grendel is how I say. And it's interesting. I'm just looking at a thing, and I pronounced Cadensor wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's supposed to be Cadensor. Ka.
Okay, because I say it the way you say it.
But,
yeah, I think I had the first syllable pronounced more too, Cadensor. Cadensor, though, that makes sense.
But, you know, it's...
Oh, Ishamael.
Ishamael.
And Samael.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are really common mistakes. I hear that a lot.
Right.
So Ben was right. We had that famous tagline from our from the original podcasters, and he had this thing, I think Samael is pretty buff. That got used a lot. I sort of went away when he did, I guess.
Yeah. Another one that I have lots of problems with, and I can't believe I didn't get it on the list, but is the golem or the I can't even pronounce it right now.
The golem?
The golem.
Whatever it
is that's chasing Matt.
Yeah.
Gollum. It's Gollum.
It's Gollum?
Gollum. I had that wrong.
Gollum.
Gollum.
I had it as more like a golem.
I am not absolutely sure, but, I mean, that's how I say it. So.
What about some of the other Sean Chen beasts that made me think of the Grom? Then there were two of the others that I think
Rockin
I had problems. Rockin'
and Toe Rockin'.
Yeah, and then there was another one, the
Torm. Book is right in front of me.
Oh, maybe it was the name of that Suras pet.
Tredip?
Yes, that thing. I can't remember.
Almandragal. Yeah, the Lopar. Almandragal was his name or something like that?
Something like that. I would have to look that
Lopar,
up.
It was Lopar, wasn't it?
Lopar. I thought there was another one that I couldn't... Maybe I'm just hallucinating.
Let's see.
I'm sure there's a zillion others I'll think of after you're off the air here with us.
Shredit is another one. Remember the elephant-like creature?
Corm. C-O-R-L-M. I like that word. Torm. That's all I can find.
What about Tuan's new name as Empress?
Fortuana,
okay. I'm not sure how else you could pronounce that, but I've been wrong before. So.
That I'm assuming is right. I'm pretty sure I heard Jim pronounce it that way, because that was his choice of name.
It must be something else. There seems like a million things, and then I didn't add enough to the list.
Ogier.
Motai.
What about, speaking of historical figures, Latra Posei or Posei de Cuma?
Oh, yeah, Latra.
I got the Latra, but I'm not sure about the second and third names.
Boy.
It's P-O-S-A-E and then D-E-C-U-M-E.
Posei de Cuma.
Cuma, okay.
That's
okay, so we're
totally
not super off on that one.
I think that's think it anyway. Say it to Kume. Yeah.
Sort of to throw something in at the last minute because it just popped into my mind because of that. And I'm sure this is going to be another read and find out. Can you tell us anything about the lack of Lucerne's voice now that Rand has had his so-called epiphany on Dragonmount? Is that an actual merging of the characters? Are we done with the voice of Lucerne?
I need to learn Old Tongue for Read and Find Out.
I'm still waiting for May the Light Illumine You. I was hoping somebody would pop up with that for the podcast. That's how I try to close each episode, so that's why I asked Brandon for it. But I'm just going to have to challenge him.
I had one last pronunciation. I unfortunately had my thing muted at the moment, but is it Ashandarai?
Ashandarai.
Oh, okay.
I'm way off. Shandarai. All right, just a couple more questions. First off, who killed Asmodian?
I did.
Maria did.
Robert Jordan killed him, actually.
Yep. And secondly, I had... sadly, I had forgotten about this until I checked my Twitter earlier this morning, but today actually is the anniversary of the passing of Robert Jordan.
The third, yes.
Oh, I had forgotten that myself.
Yeah.
This is scary.
So, first off, I think we should probably take a real quick moment of silence, and then after that, Maria and Alan, if you two would like to say something, anything, to commemorate it for the podcast, we will get this out shortly so it won't be outdated. So just a couple of seconds, and then if you two would like to say something.
He came like the wind touched everything.
and like the wind was gone. And I miss him still.
Thanks very much.
I think we all do.
Very much
missed. As do we all.
Well, there'll never be another like him. That's all I can say.
And I should say, that's the first time I ever heard anyone purposely have silence on the radio.
Well, it'll be a first, I suppose. I think I've heard it done before, but...
We've done it before.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, when we first found out about his passing, we had a quick, very fast...
We had a quick recorded moment
podcast.
Of silence.
And we did have a quick moment of silence, exactly.
Hmm. Sweet.
What has been the most enjoyable part of working on the Wheel of Time?
Damn near all of it? Seriously.
You couldn't tell us we didn't find out on that one.
You know, I came in, I started this job, it's almost 15 years now, and I came in and I was not helping with the books at all. I was doing fan mail and filing. And about that time, they decided to do the audiobooks, and they were doing them, you know, male and female. And Jim looked at me one day and said, they're doing male and female. I need somebody to read the books and mark when it changes from male to female point of view. Can you do that? And I'm like, uh-huh, uh-huh. Get paid to read the Wheel of Time? I mean, it's just so, I mean, I was a big fan before I started the job. You got to understand that. So it was like, this is, you know, a dream come true. I'm getting paid to read the Wheel of Time. It's just so great. And Jim, he was just so much fun. He would come in the morning singing. He would forget I was here and set the alarm, so I would step out of my office and set it off, and the police would come. He knew everything. I mean, he just knew so much. Just talking with him was wonderful. And Harriet is just an amazing lady. And Brandon is way cool. I mean, this job, it's a dream. I love it. And I get to talk to great people like you guys and go to cons. And it's a business.
Can I tell you how extremely jealous I am of you right now?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm jealous enough to turn to the dark one.
Perfect servant. Perfect servant.
Yeah.
What about you, Alan?
Well, I've been here, I guess, a little over 9 years at this point. And just to back up what Maria said, you know, just being able to hang out with Jim and work with him on a daily basis was such a great kick. We're here surrounded by a physical representation of Jim's mind in a way. There are 15,000 volumes in our offices, many of which are reference books. And it was just so wonderful to be able to, you know, tap that side of your mind. And Jim would ask the most obscure questions to be dug out in various places. And that's just such a great amount of fun for me. Just digging out useless information of any possible sort. There are things that go into the books that are important to know about, and as you know, Jim was very, very fastidious and rigorous in his background of what he was writing about. If he wrote about blacksmithing, it was going to be absolutely correct in all ways, as best as he could make it. And so Maria and I both became part of that process. Just digging up a lot of things for him. So it's, you know, what we've got here is essentially a job where she and I come in 8-9 hours a day, live in a total fantasy world. 8 hours, 7 or 8 hours are spent asleep. Much of that is very vivid dreams. So it's another fantasy world. That only leaves about 8 hours of reality that we have to deal with. And, you know, we found ways of making that kind of disappear also. So it's great. I figure I'm living about 85% total fantasy at this point. And so it's a wonderful place to be. I'd recommend it to everyone out there.
Yes.
unfortunately, there's something of a limit to the number of Robert Jordans that there are in the world, although that leads me right into my next question is, now that obviously no one can fill the hole that Jim Rigney did. I mean, no one can take his place, but we have Brandon now, and you're working with Brandon, but now it's a long-distance relationship. How is that working out? And he's such a maniac for work. I cannot imagine how any human being gets the amount of writing that he does done and all the other things that he does.
I'm convinced he's a robot.
Human. I've calculated that he's an android. Yeah, he's an android. I'm sure of it. He's a big, cuddly android, but I think, you know, really suspect.
He's pretty amazing. I mean, the work ethic he has is just incredible. I mean, The Way of Kings and Towers of Midnight the same year. Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The long distance.
And an Alcatraz, I think, too.
Oh, yeah. And
a tour. Sorry, and two tours.
And a couple of cons, or more, actually, than a couple. But the long distance thing, you know, living in the future makes it easy. And we actually hear all of us older farts in Charleston made the jump to digital editing for Towers of Midnight, which made it a lot easier than The Gathering Storm when we were still doing everything on paper.
Wow. I didn't realize you guys did that all on paper.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah.
I can't even imagine how complicated it would be to do it on paper.
No.
It was, you know, it worked. We got it done, but we made it up. And it was still kind of complicated because I had no idea how to do some things, and I'd have to email, and Peter, Brandon's assistant, would tell me how to do it. Peter's great. Mm-hmm. Peter is fabulous. And
I know. I hurt Peter.
I wish I could have been at Dragon Con just so I could have met him.
Oh, me too.
But, you know, it works. You know, we've got email. We email back and forth. Occasionally we do the phone call. Occasionally we actually get together. And it's...
Yeah, probably the most difficult thing is the time difference. And that not only is he, 3 hours behind us, but Brandon does so much of his work in the evening and in the early hours, and consequently doesn't get up at 5 in the morning. So if he has to ask us something quickly in the middle of work, or we have to ask him something quickly, you know, we may have to wait for one of the other to wake up and get to the office.
Yeah.
He might as well be in New Zealand as far as the time overlap.
Exactly.
We made it work.
Cool. Yeah, well, I think Peter's probably got dream job number 2.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, how do you keep up with somebody who's like that? I mean, he's just, I mean, just talking to him in person is, and I'm sure that probably Robert Jordan is the same way. I think it's a little overwhelming. There's so much creativity going on, and you can see that the mind is working so fast. It's almost like 2 or 3 different things going on at one time. You know it's not, but it just almost seems that way, and you can almost get a little overwhelmed just trying to keep up with the flow of ideas, you know.
That's very true with Jim, and especially Jim and Harriet talking together sometimes. You know, it would be like, wow, what, wow, because they're just both so incredibly bright, and it's very cool.
Once again, I just want to thank Jennifer, Alan, and Maria for being able to join us today. It's phenomenal talking to all 3 of you. It is just amazing to be able to get to interact so closely with people who are so closely ingrained with the series. It's been a very true pleasure.
We sure do appreciate you coming on with us. That's for
it's
one thing.
Been a blast. This has been fun.
Been an honor. Thank you so much for having us, and we hope to see you at one of the cons.
Yes,
I hope so too.
Yeah,
we do want to issue an open invitation. If you ever have, you know, any time at all, and you want to, we'll make it work. You want to talk with us again, maybe after the next release or something. Anytime, just we'll make it work.
Okay.
Okay. Any of you have a spare couch where you live? That's
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to come, if you want to come to Nowhere, Idaho.
Wow.
It's a date.
I actually live in Nowhere, California, if that's of any help. I'm one of the last really rural areas in California. I joke that it's like the Two Rivers, only without the amenities.
Without the water.
We don't even have an inn. We have no inn.
Oh,
wow.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks
so much.
Thank you.
Again, and thanks to everybody who showed up for this. We really appreciate it. And
yeah. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. Gave me something to do this afternoon besides beat my head against that paper I'm trying to write.
Then maybe we shouldn't have. No. I'm sure you'll get it done in time.
I'm 10 days ahead of schedule on this paper, so it's okay.
Oh, all right.
Good.
Well, anyway. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Maria, Jennifer, Mark, Spencer, and Andrew for showing up. And I think that'll pretty much wrap up this episode. So this is Virginia saying, may the light illumine you until we meet again, or until Brandon gives me my catchphrase in the old poem.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming out for Maria and Alan. You guys have been great. And thanks again for having me on the podcast, everyone. It's always great to be here.
And until next time, may you find water and shade.
And for myself, Andrew Gellis, and everyone here at the Fourth Age, Saravya Nindo Manchima Taishite.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by Dragonmount.com. To contact us, visit our website, bit.ly/fourthage.
Want me to tell you about my dreams? I keep dreaming it's the last battle, and it's not just, you know, in the book. I'm at the last battle, and this is a recurring dream kind of thing. And like one night was the last battle, and Napoleon showed up with his dirigible to fight for the side of the lives, and we were trying to find out if they were hydrogen or helium because it, you know, made a big difference.
Makes a difference, yeah.
Very steampunk of you. Another night, Darth Vader, the original one, not whiny boy, showed up to fight for the dark one. It just keeps going on and on, and it's fun, sort of. Sometimes it's scary. There was one where we were fighting the last battle in a gated community, and Tam Althor showed up, and then we realized that it wasn't really Tam Althor, it was the Dark One, and so we had to escape, and so we did. And then after that, here comes Wilson Grooms. And, you know, I love Wilson. Wilson is one of my favorite people on Earth. And then we realized it wasn't really Wilson, and we had to fight him. And I had a sword, and I had to hit Wilson with what looked like Wilson with a sword, and it was really scary and unpleasant. And I was glad to wake up for that one, but usually they're fun.
You must be a dreamer.
I dream. I had a dream once.
I want whatever you're on.
send it here immediately.
I think it's called Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.